Alrighty, we're back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I'm the host of the most, Jimmy Falcon, and it is an absolute honor to welcome a legend of pro wrestling, powerlifting, Olympics, the Olympic strongman, Kim Patera. How are you, sir?
Good, yourself?
I'm doing a whole lot better now getting to talk with you, sir. It's an honor.
Well, I have some breaking news.
Go ahead.
People always ask me why I'm not in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Oh, go for it.
Well, I talked to Jimmy Brunzell today, and Jimmy said that the reason he's not in it, and I'm not in it, and there's a lot of people that aren't in it, is because McMahon hates us.
Oh, no.
I says, well, that's easy to understand because I can't stand that motherfucker.
It's crazy. I mean, I think about, like, Jim Brunzell and Brian Blair, two of the nicest guys I know. I mean, I've known Brian for over a decade now, close to a decade. And just to hear stuff like that's, you know, that's crazy. I mean, a lot of people are always like, oh, Vince McMahon is so nice. And you're just like, nope.
He's a prick. But anyway, the back half of that is that I was inducted into the Hall of Fame here in Minnesota yesterday, and along with a couple other guys, and it was very, very nice. Very nice to be acknowledged. I'm not from Minnesota, but I live here. I've lived here off and on for, gee whiz, I don't know, 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, it was. Fantastic turnout too.
Fantastic.
Yeah, then I think that's the fifth or sixth Hall of Fame I've been inducted into.
When I think about Hall of Fames and them having a meaning, I think of like the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum. You know, and what's the one you mentioned in Minnesota?
MAU. I don't know what it stands for, but needless to say, Minnesota something.
Minnesota of wrestling.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you so much stuff. Obviously, you don't have very fond memories of Vince, but, you know, overall, like, with the people you worked with there, getting to work with there in general, and you did get your own action figure, so I think that at least is cool. What are some, looking back, what are some of your memories that may not involve Vince and, like, some of the guys you worked with in some of your matches?
Well, Vince has to be involved because when was hired... back in 1976, the end of 76, by his father.
Oh, wow.
I was brought in to do TV for 3 months prior to starting. I actually officially started with the match with Bruno Sammartino as main event in Madison Square Garden 1977. And Vince, he was a TV announcer, and he was all full of himself, you know. He thought he was, well, he knew he was going to inherit the business someday. Of course, that was still 6 years in the future at times. And so, you know, I got along great with Vince. And, the, you know, we used to ride around together. I remember one night he calls me. He says, Ken, I want to go to Studio 54. I said, really? And he says, yeah, can you get us in? I said, yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. We went down to Studio 54 with my wife was with me in New York. Mm-hmm. So it was me and my wife, Vince, and his date was the Grand Wizard.
Ernie Roth.
Yeah, Ernie Roth. He was my manager at the time.
Wow, what an icon for managing there.
What's that?
I said, what an icon for managing. He was such a mind for the business.
Yeah, he was. He was. And so anyway, we go down to Studio 54, and I go, Vince says, go up the front door. to get us in. I said, okay. I mean, there were thousands and thousands of people out there wanting to get in. But not everybody that showed up at Studio 54 ever got in.
Oh, yeah, they got to have door people.
Well, you had to be somebody. And, you know, at that time. And so I went up, and I saw the doorman there. He comes over, hey, Ken Patera, how you doing? So I says, well, we're in. He turns out he was a defensive halfback for my brother at the Seattle Seahawks at the time.
Okay.
And yeah, so he starts talking to me about playing football for my brother in the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, goodness.
And he says, do you want to come in? I said, yeah, I got one of the promoters from the WWF here, and I got my wife and my manager. Oh, come on right in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
No problem. Yeah, so there we were. 2 minutes later, we were out on the dance floor at Studio 54. Yeah, those were the days.
Yeah, it's amazing what, you know, he ends up, he probably lost a lot of his free will when he became owner.
What's that now?
I would say I think Vince Jr. probably lost a lot of his free will when he became the owner of the WWF. He probably just felt too much businessy, I don't know. And it seems like, you know, I've heard some good stories about the guy, but, you know, in the end, the guy himself is different than the product and everything you see on television.
Oh, totally. Totally. He had this vision of professional wrestling being like a Broadway play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he wanted everything scripted. He wanted hands-on with everything. And, of course, his dad was never that way, and no other promoter in the country or the world, as far as that's concerned, was ever that way. You know, wrestling was billed as an athletic contest. Well, Vince wanted to, you know, kind of keep a little bit of the athleticism in there and then bring a whole lot of showbiz. And that's what he did. Yeah. So, I mean, he owned the thing. You know, he inherited it all from his dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, his grandfather actually started the WWWF, which is Worldwide Wrestling Federation, back in 32. And for those that want to know the history, I'll just give you a quick rundown. New York Wrestling, you know, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, they started off in Staten Island, Queens, New York, Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
They were just in the New York suburbs or boroughs, they call them boroughs back there. And so there's, five or six boroughs in New York, and that's where the WWF was. They never went outside of there. Hell, they didn't have to. They had like 40 million people in that area, you know, in a 20-mile area. So.
Oh, yeah, I know it goes all the way back to like to Jess McMahon and Toots Mont, and it was Capital Wrestling. And I mean, it's been in the family definitely for many years. It's amazing.
Right, exactly.
He's at
least
been able to keep it going, you know, and will hopefully be able to pass it down to someone in the family, probably Hunter and Stephanie.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. You know, it was always in the family. You know, first Grandpa and then old man Vince, and then Vince Jr., and now Well, I don't know. Somebody bought them, didn't they? Some big corporation.
Yeah,
I guess,
yeah, recently I heard that was in the news, so I'm not, you know, I try not to keep up much these days. I'm such an old school fan. I really grew up back in the day watching it, especially watched the Attitude Era, and I think that got me into the older stuff and how I ended up, you know, getting into Pantera and Andre the Giant and the Heenan family and so on and so forth.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not interested hardly at all in the product anymore. It's just, as far as I'm concerned, it's just, you know, if you want to see a cartoon, turn it on in the morning. There's cartoons all over TV in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sit there with your grandkids. Yeah, so I don't know. It's just not what it used to be.
No, I think a lot of people would agree with that. And you also worked for the legendary Vern Gagne in the AWA, which is, you know, Minnesota, talking about Minnesota. What was it like working for Vern?
Well, you know, I was in the 72 Olympic Games, Munich, Germany. Vern Gagne brought his whole family over to Munich to watch the Olympics when I was over there.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so I knew his son, Greg. Well, I knew the three daughters, too. I knew his wife, Mary. I knew the whole family. But the deal was, I contacted Vern through my brother, the one that was the football coach. Mm-hmm. He knew. And so I told Vern that I needed a little assistance, you know, training expense or whatnot. And he said, well, how much do you need? Well, you have to understand, this is 1970 now. It's 53 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
$100 a week would be fantastic. He says, I think we can arrange that. So Vern sponsored me $100 a week for 2.5 years. And then finally I went to the Olympic Games. I got out and I just happened to be living with a guy by Ric Flair.
Oh my goodness.
And Ric Flair had interest in becoming a pro wrestler too.
Oh yeah, I'm...
Yeah, how are your dogs doing?
Well, yeah, I was just trying to go sneak and close the other door so mine would stop talking. Go ahead, Ken, I'm listening.
Okay. So anyway, Ric Flair and I had a house together.
Okay.
That we were renting in South Minneapolis.
Oh, wow.
And that was the original party house, brother.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Gosh.
Fuck. You know, the stories that people hear and talk about Ric Flair, they're all true. Yeah, no embellishment needed. He was Jesus. He was John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and all those guys rolled into one. The only thing that Rick didn't do, he never did drugs.
Hard drugs and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, he never even smoked marijuana or pop pills. I think he's smoking marijuana now.
Because yeah, him, Mike. I think he chews. I know I chew tobacco. I think he chews.
Oh, yeah, he did that. I chew tobacco. Copenhagen. I don't mess around with any of that kid shit.
Well, I have Stokers.
Which one?
Stokers.
Okay.
It's not bad. It's about only still less than $4 a can, and how you get to that stuff you're buying is getting closer to $6-$7, depending on where you're at.
Try $11.
Jesus Christ, Ken.
It's $11 a can now.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I buy a tube of it.
Yeah.
Cans. Mm-hmm. So I go in there. It costs, with tax and stuff, it's like $116, $117. And when I started chewing that stuff, a tube would be $11.
Wow.
For cans. One can is $11.
Yeah. How time flies.
Yeah, but I'm on Social Security, so I can afford it.
There you go. Yeah, we all pay for it. Hopefully we can all get it someday. You might be the last generation. You might be getting my social right now, Ken, and that's okay. I'll pay for you. I'll pay for you, buddy.
You better start saving right now just to make sure.
Yeah, I need to get a 401k or something. Even a 201F would be fine.
Yeah.
You also worked for, Herb Abrams, who I've always heard some zany stories about, but who in his heart seemed like a good guy. What was it like working for Herb Abrams, UWF?
Well, I don't even hardly remember Herb. I only did three shows for him.
Yeah, I wasn't around very long, unfortunately.
Yeah, I did three shows. They were TV. I did three TVs for him. I never did a house show. And, so I wasn't really, he was flying me in to L.A. from Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And I had a gym. And so I was tied up with different businesses. And I really didn't even want to do it. But he offered me a certain amount of money. I really don't even remember the amount of money, but for the money, it was worth it. And so I went out those three times that I remember. Mm-hmm. It might be four, but no more than four. And Ryan Blair used to tell me about riding around in Herb Abrams. Limousine, snorting cocaine.
Oh, my God.
And, oh, yeah, he said Abrams was completely out of his mind. And he was so fucked up all the time. And he didn't know anything about the wrestling business.
Yeah, just a super fan.
And I guess he had, he was a, started off as a tailor. And, he wound up owning three or four expensive men's clothing stores.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's where he made his money.
It's amazing.
And,
it's amazing to find stuff like that out.
Yeah, and so one thing leads to another. Next thing he knows, he's all out of money. You know, he's basically face down in the ditch. With cocaine all around him and not knowing what's up or what's down, and that was the end of his wrestling. How long was he in business?
Well, it was from like 90 to 90 whenever he passed away, but I think it was just because he never actually like quit doing he probably sold VHS tapes and whatnot to keep the money flowing, but I think he probably stopped doing shows a year or two before he actually passed away.
Yeah, I guess he was an all right guy, you know. He had Bruno Sammartino out there doing color commentary with him.
I remember that.
And superstar Billy Graham came out.
Oh man, what a legend, and just having him pass away recently, wow.
Yeah.
He was an icon.
Yeah. You know, when I started here in the AWA back in 73, him and Ivan Koloff were in as a tag team.
And then
single matches, too. And so I wound up doing a gimmick with Superstar lifting weights, in the middle of the ring. And then we transferred that to arm wrestling contests in the ring. So it worked out fantastic because, I was right out of the Olympic Games, world's strongest man. Mm-hmm. Billy had a body like Adonis, so it really worked out good. Yeah, we drew a lot of money with that.
Yeah, and being that you were the original World's Strongest Man, I had a thought, dream match wise, who you thought, you in your prime and Mark Henry in his prime, who you think would win in a match, just
Oh,
speaking,
I
so
think.
to say.
Okay. I think I'd smoke him. He wouldn't have a chance. Get him in that finger lock and put him on his hands and knees, and he'd be looking up to me and saying, "Please, Mr. Patera, please, Mr. Patera, don't hurt me anymore. I can't take it anymore. Please let me go."
Man,
But,
cut a promo on him right there.
yeah. I talked to Mark a couple times.
That's
He's
cool. Very cool.
a decent guy.
Yeah, that's where I remember the original. Of course, you're the original, but I originally remember hearing the moniker of the World's Strongest Man when I was originally watching wrestling with Mark Henry.
Well, hell, when I was in the WWF towards the end of my career, they had Dino Bravo as the World's Strongest Man. They had Big John Studd as the World's Strongest Man.
Oh,
Fuck that McMahon. He did everything he could because he didn't like me anymore.
that
I called him a motherfucker too many times.
sucks.
Yeah.
Well, you stood up for yourself is what I would say, how I would put it. I mean, it
That's what
seems
I
like,
call.
you didn't want him to stomp all over you.
So I just got fed up with the wrestling business, and I went in the office one day and I says, the fucking business is so horseshit anymore anyway. I said, I want to finish up, sometime in November. I said, let's say Thanksgiving. And this is probably August or June or whatever. I said, I'll put over whoever you want. I said, how about Bad News Brown, King Kong Bundy, Big Boss Man, Honky Tonk Man? Those were all the newer guys that were coming into the WWF at the time. I said, I'll put them all over. But even the Rooster, Terry Taylor. I put them all over right in the middle of the ring. Yeah, it didn't
Yeah, you
matter to
kind of did go out on a bad losing streak. That's unfortunate.
why.
Well, I mean, you seemed like you wanted to leave on your own free will, and he just kind of threw you under the bus.
No, I did leave on my own free will. I told him I would do it.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
Oh, I told him I would.
That was
Fuck
nice
it.
of you.
There was nothing. There's no future for me in the WWF or any other wrestling organization. I know some guys want me to go down for Ted Turner, and stuff like that. And I said, nah. I said, I'm going to go back to Minnesota and start a health club. And that's what I did. I wound up starting a health club, really successful. And then I started a limousine service. I had three big stretch limos, and I had a tanning salon. Oh, God, what a sports nutrition line, and sports apparel. I had my finger in about 10 different things, and I was really doing well. So the best thing for me to do at that time was to get the fuck out of wrestling.
Well, it seems like you, I mean, and that was smart of you. I think it really was to find a way. You're like, hey, I can do just about anything to make money, and I don't have to break my body doing it.
Exactly. My body was all busted up. Shit, and 9 days from today, I'm going in for a very extensive back surgery. They're going to put in, what the hell they call it? I can't even remember what they're calling it, but my bottom four lumbar vertebrae are all smashed on top of one another. And I need a walker to get around, know. Yeah, so or a wheelchair. So I've been like this for about a year and a half, 2 years now. I just can't take it anymore. Yeah, so. Anyway.
Well, that sucks, Ken. I hope the surgery goes well for you. I don't want you to be down. I mean, I got some bad knees, but I'm still not even 35 yet, so I can't even imagine if I don't do something about it. It's just going to get worse.
I'm almost 80.
Yeah, I know. I was amazed when I looked that up to kind of get some questions in my head. I was like, wow, Patera's almost 80, and I feel bad for being 35 and only spending a few years in wrestling.
Yeah. Well, the Iron Sheik passed away.
Oh, yes.
82. Superstar Billy Graham, he was my age. He was 79. Harley Race passed away a couple years ago. He was my age. Yeah, so, yeah, when you get to be basically in your early to mid 70s, the body just completely collapses.
Well, hopefully the mind's still kind of sharp.
I can still laugh about it. Fuck it.
Yeah, hopefully the mind still does seem pretty sharp. You can reminisce about the olden days, kind of like I do now.
Yeah. I still remember everything. You know, there might be some little tidbits that I forgot, but they won't be interesting anyway.
Well, before I call up Jeff and get him involved in the matter, we can discuss being like 30 years now since the original Maccabee Mania. That's crazy to even say. I did want to ask you, opponent-wise, I always used to ask who was your toughest opponent, and I know that wrestling's not really, based on that, but so to say, who's the toughest guy you ever fought in the ring that you thought or something might have went wrong with?
Oh, Andre the Giant. He was such a big bastard. I wrestled him 600 times.
Yeah.
And people said, well, how can you wrestle somebody 600 times? I said, well, over a 16-year career, I wrestled him in tag teams, six-man tags, eight-man tags, battle royals. I wrestled him in almost 200 battle royals, where him and I were the last two in the ring. And then single matches. Mm-hmm. I had 300 single matches with him. So, the thing is, when I got out of the Olympic Games, I was billed as the world's strongest man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a giant, And so it was logical to put the world's strongest man and the giant together. And because we could both work. I was a very good athlete. He was a good athlete too. And so we could get in there and perform and do a good job. Entertain the people. That's what it was.
I had the honor of knowing Don Leo Jonathan for many years, and I heard a lot of great Andre the Giant stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never knew Don that well. I remember I graduated from Brigham Young University, a Mormon school.
Mm-hmm.
Don Leo, he was a Mormon.
Oh, yeah, and his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, I knew him for close to 10 years probably. And I asked him one day, back when I was still doing wrestling managing mostly, if I had like a masked gimmick that was Canadian, and I asked if I could say I was his grandson, and he was like, Jimmy, you know what? No one's ever asked me that. I feel like a lot of people probably just said they were, it's wrestling, everyone's so-and-so's relative, so he gave me that honor. So I did say that for a while, and, it was just an honor to be able to say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was good.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I had a wrestling camp for 3 years after I shut down all my other businesses. After 10 years, I opened up a wrestling camp. Really had great success with that. and I promoted shows here in the Midwest. And I did about 40 shows a year for 3 years.
Wow.
Well, at that time it was tough getting girls interested in wrestling. Or maybe that was just a Minnesota thing or something.
It's a Midwestern thing.
What's that?
It seems like it's a Midwestern thing.
Yeah, right. So anyway, this one girl that started for me, after about 6 months, she comes to me and says, "Hi, Dad." I looked at her, "What?" She says, "Can I use your last name and for my wrestling?" Because everybody that runs these independent shows in the country, everybody knows you. And I was thinking, if I went as your daughter, that would help my bookings and stuff. I said, "Yeah." I said, "If you think it'll help, go ahead."
That's nice.
Yeah, and it did help. She doesn't wrestle anymore, but.
We'll have to talk. I'd still be willing to interview if she'd be willing to do it. I just think it's cool that, you know, she gave you that, you gave her that honor, and she was willing to ask. I'm going to call Jeff, and let's see here.
Hello.
All righty, Jeff.
Hello.
Kenny, you there?
I'm here.
Jeffrey!
Kenneth!
What are you doing?
It's a Sunday afternoon. Just watched the Yankees blow a game in the bottom of the 11th. And I'm just chilling. What are you doing?
I'm talking to you.
Do you know, Ken, this morning I woke up at 5:30. My alarm went off on the phone. We had an emergency tornado thing. They said, get in your basement right now. Can you believe that?
No, I mean, you guys don't ever hardly have a tornado back there.
No, so they had a big thunderstorm pattern, and I read the National Weather Service, and they said there was rotation within the clouds or whatever, the storm, and they expected it to be a tornado. So it was a little bit west of me, but I have to say it was a little scary because we're not used to that.
Yeah, hell, I live in the Midwest. We get that shit all the time.
Yeah,
we at least get the warnings. I mean, thankfully in my era we haven't had many tornadoes, at least out by where I live. But I mean, yeah, it's always possible.
Oh, yeah. And southern Illinois there. Oh yeah.
Well, central, but yeah, it's all. Well, I'm not too far from southern. Jeff, let's talk Maccabiah Mania, because you know me. You and I know each other for 30, 40 years now. You know, going into the future, I mean, you know, it's been a while now, but say I keep knowing you, I plan on it. I'm always going to want to talk about, you know, Maccabiah Mania. And you got me connected with Ken. I have to thank you for that. But, you know, tell us the story of how, I mean, I've talked a little with Ken about how you guys met, but, you know, from your angle, how did you meet Ken, just being a big wrestling fan and getting to meet one of your idols?
It was 1978 January, the Super Bowl of wrestling at the Orange Bowl in Miami. I believe it was a Wednesday night. I think that Monday night I was at the Garden. I saw Ken Reppel, Chief J. Strongbow, whatever. Anyway, so I wanted to be a sports reporter, so I was carried around a portable tape recorder. Ken comes out of the ring. It was a horrible night, raining and everything, and he had Dusty Rhodes' blood all over him and everything. And I go right up to him, because I always had a lot of chutzpah, and I said, "Hey, would you mind doing an interview?" And Ken, showing that really was a regular human being, he goes, "Sure, let me get a shower. I'll meet you out here in 20 minutes. And that's what happened. And then we went out drinking. I think I had about 15 Miller Lights, which was the new hot beer at the time. But because I was so excited as a mark to be with the guy that I saw on TV, I don't think I got buzzed at all. And that was the beginning of a friendship that's lasted 45 and a half years. Amazing.
I would have said 45 years, but you have to put
Well, I think that's the fan in him. Like, I'm going to remember this interview with, you know, with you and Ken for, you know, a long, long time, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was definitely a thrill for me. And the original thrill of a mark meeting of someone famous like Ken developed into just a friendship where he treated me like a regular person. I viewed him as a regular person, and we just became friends. And then when I decided to do that could be a mania, I mean, there was only one person that could be my tag team partner. But I do have to say that he let me down very badly in that match against Iron Sheik and Iron Mike Sharp. Because
yeah, he's like, come on, what are you doing? Get in the ring, Maccabee.
Because what happened was, when you hear about wrestlers getting blown up, first of all, never wrestled. And second of all, I was nervous and scared to death. And I blew up. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. And they were getting heat on me and beating the crap out of me. So I finally crawled over to the ropes, barely could get out of the ring, tag Ken, who made the hot tag for 15 seconds. He came back over and tagged me in. It's 45 years later, I still don't think I got my breath back from that, Ken.
Yeah, I loved it.
Well, that's paying your dues. He probably knew you didn't want to do it again, and thankfully you did do it again, but, you know, people are still talking about it. I mean, we're not the only ones.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, Jeff had this idea as a fundraiser, you know, to raise money for the Maccabee game, Sober in Israel. And he goes and rents a big circus tent and puts it right in his cul-de-sac. Well, he had all kinds of zoning problems with the city of Elizabeth, New Jersey. But he's a silver-tongued devil. You know, he talked his way right into convincing those knuckleheads on the city council to allow him to put up this monstrous circus tent right in the neighborhood.
And if you watch the video, you see Ken laughing. He couldn't control the laughter just out of the whole ridiculousness of what was going on there. It was pretty funny. But the reason it became a cult thing was because I did another show in 97 at Livingston High School, and my cousin Michael Mansky, Ken knows Mike very well, a wrestling historian, he loves wrestling.
Yeah, I love Mike.
He works for a company called DigiView Entertainment. What they did, their number one vendor was Walmart, the dollar bin. And they would buy a video, repackage it, basically make chicken salad out of chicken shit. And they packaged the two Maccabee Manias into Grandmasters of Wrestling, four different copies of them. 650,000 copies were sold at the Walmart dollar bin. And because it was so horrible, so stupid, and so ridiculous, with a cartoon character, the Mighty Maccabee, and all these old timers and everything, it became a cult thing.
Yeah, now most of the guys that participated in that with us, Jeff, they're dying off like flies.
I was looking at the poster, Ken. It really is amazing. Snooka's gone. Bucky's gone. Sheik and Sharp are gone. Kowalski's gone. Fly by Ted Rocco Rock, who was the Cheetah Kid, is gone. A lot of them are just. Yeah. It's very sad. And how's it feel for you? Because these were the guys. These were your running buddies. The guys you traveled around the country and the world with. How's it feel for you to see all these guys going?
Well, I take one day at a time, Jeff. I don't get too excited about anything. And I know we're all going to die someday. There's two things in life, you know. You have to pay your taxes and you have to die.
Yes.
I think I'm going to do those very well.
I feel like Erwin R. Scheister said that in the promo, probably.
You know, Ken, there's actually three things. There's a third thing. You know what that is?
What?
The mighty Maccabee doesn't take any bumps.
Oh, I forgot that one.
You actually took a couple, though, Jeff. I mean, they might not have been the best, but you did bump, and even some yard targeters can't say they do that. So, I mean, you've made it, my friend. You've made it.
So, yeah. Ken, I want to ask you a question. We were friends, and when I first approached you about doing this, what went through your head when I came to you with this cockamamie idea?
Well, I gave it some thought, and I said, well, what the hell am I getting myself into now? Doing something in somebody's front yard, you know, is this real? I felt like I was the reincarnation of Buddy Rose. You know, when he was a kid, 10, 12 years old, he used to set up a ring in his backyard. The ring were broomsticks for ring posts, and then him and his buddies would put string as ring ropes, and then they go in there and beat the shit out of each other when they were 10, 11, 12 years old. We were a little better than that, but not much.
How about the night before when we went to that Italian restaurant for dinner and just tore that place apart?
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. That fucking sheik, he says, you know, the Iron Sheik.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He has a big New York Strip.
Yeah. I remember this story. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you finish it, Jeff.
Well, you got it, King. First of all, we all ate as much and drank as much as humanly possible. And then we're still drinking and doing the cappuccinos. And while we're having dessert, it's like 11:30. The waitress brings over the sheik another 20-ounce New York Strip.
Yeah.
I go, sheik, what are you doing? He goes, Jeff, you are paying, I am eating. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And he downed it.
Yeah. I don't know how the hell he ate it.
He was a piece of work. And how about when you guys were in the kitchen talk, because you guys are night owls, you live that type of life. And
yeah.
But 4 a.m, I keep telling you to go to sleep. You wouldn't listen to me. And finally, my ex-wife Carol comes down and just yelled at everybody, "Get the hell to sleep!" And everyone, and that did the trick, I think.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that finished. That put the cherry on the top of the cake there.
Well, I was going to say, did that just only shut you guys up, or Jeff, did that cause your divorce?
It didn't cause a divorce. But when I did the second wrestle, I said I want to do Maccabee Mania 2. She goes, "You can do it, but you're not doing it at the house. You better find another place." That's where,
yeah,
I had to go to Livingston High School.
Yeah, we went over the high school. Well, the high school, that turned out fantastic.
Yeah, that was great. That was good.
But they had a nice gymnasium there and everything. And I think we had Freddie Blassie there at that one, didn't we?
Right, Freddie Blassie. And
yeah.
The story behind that was, I was a summer camp counselor, Camp Scatico, upstate New York, and every year you had the camp sing, the group sing. So I was leading my group in the sing, and of course, one of the songs I had to do was Pencil and Geek, because the kids all like this. Just,
oh, yeah.
Song. So here it is, 20 years later, now we're all adults, these kids are grown up, I'm grown up. And I said, Blassie, if I can get Blassie, let's have him do Pencil and Geek. So I got in touch with Ed Cohen or someone at WWE, and they told me what it cost, and we brought him out.
Yeah, I like, too, that, you know, not only did he do Pencil Neck Geek, he jumped in on the Sheik promo and started dissing WCW and all those other Pencil Neck Geeks.
That was really cool, because didn't ask him to do it, he just did it. That was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, Freddie was a gamer. You know, he loved fucking around. I never seen, a lot of people talk about certain guys about being great rippers.
Yeah.
No, nobody was as good as Freddie Blassie.
did he pull any ribs on you?
No. No, he didn't pull any ribs on me, but he did on Snuka and everybody else. Yeah.
Hey, Ken, my son Michael was telling me he saw on Conrad Thompson's podcast that you're getting into some Hall of Fame next week. What's this one about?
Well, I got inducted last night into the Minnesota Hall of Fame.
Oh, I thought this was in Waterloo, Iowa or something like that. Is there another one?
Oh, that one. Well, that's the same day as my back surgery.
Oh, you are getting it.
Yeah, they postponed it twice. This is
right.
The third time now. And the last time was they didn't have enough operating room nurses available for that day.
Right.
And so they had to postpone it, and now we're doing it on the 25th of July.
Well, they didn't have enough nurses because they heard that it was you that they were operating on?
Probably.
No, they're like, Tim Patero's coming in. I want to go to work.
Gonna be.
No, I said, you know, they figured out Ken Patera's going to be there. Like, we want to go to work today.
Ken, how long is the recovery going to be?
You know, it's kind of a mystery to me. They said instead of coming home, that they'd like me to go to a hospice care for at least 3 weeks.
Right.
And that's where they have all the bullshit, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I come home, it'd be about less than 2 months altogether.
All right, and that's great. And then you'll be able to be, you can walk without any walker, how's that going to work?
Well, that's what they say. I need a walker now. Like yesterday when I did that Minnesota Hall of Fame, I had to use my walker to, go from the autograph table. I was selling my new book, Ken Patera, Way to the World. And, yeah, I'm really doing good with that sales, the way I'm doing it.
That's great. I read the book in one sitting. It was great. There were some parts about you I didn't know. But I think the most amazing thing is that you almost made the Olympic team in two different sports.
Yeah, right. I missed that damn shot put by a quarter inch.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But... yeah, I would have been the only one to ever made the Olympic team in two different sports or two different events. Well, yeah, two different sports, weightlifting and track and field.
Yeah. You know, here's a little known fact. Ken was in Munich at the Olympics competing, and I was 15 years old, but I was also there in Munich. My father, my late father, Dan, was refereeing fencing, and he brought me and my cousin along to go to the Olympics. So we were there. And you know, Ken, I didn't know who you were at the time, but when we went down to the ticket scalping area called Marienplatz, I recognized Bob Roop because I was a mark and I'd seen him on TV. Yeah, and I had to run into Bob Roop of all people.
Yeah, he was in the 68 Olympics.
Yeah. He was there. Pretty amazing. The thing last night in Minnesota, was this Any other people that I might have known that were inducted along with you?
Well, there were just a couple of, Nikita.
Right.
He got inducted in. He's from Minneapolis area, but he doesn't live in Minnesota anymore.
No.
And I guess he's a minister now.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about lightning in a bottle, boy. They came up with a gimmick and he ran with it. Amazing.
Yeah, and so then there was a guy, I don't know, Eddie Sharkey.
I know Eddie Sharkey. He's the one that trained the Road Warriors, right?
And he got inducted. I think Eddie's about 83 or 84.
Wow.
Yeah, so he got inducted. I got inducted, and then Nikita.
That's great. And it was a good turnout?
Yeah, not bad, you know, for a little... They had it in a big boxing gym, a beautiful boxing gym. They had two rings set up.
Yeah.
And they had all the weightlifting paraphernalia. And then they had six heavy bags. And they had a bunch of speed bags and everything. And it was wide open. And they had a hell of a cook there.
Huh.
Did barbecue. And I ate two big pulled pork sandwiches. God, it was good.
Do you have any of your old paraphernalia and robes and stuff?
No, I sold all that stuff 4, 5, 6 years ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, all gone.
All gone.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, there was something I wanted to ask you that involves Ken. What's your favorite Ken Patera match?
You're asking me?
Of course.
Let's see. I'd have to think about that. You know, I think there were a couple matches at Madison Square Garden that were really good. There was one match that got Wrestling Observer Match of the Year with Bob Backlund. You remember that one, Ken?
Yeah, 1980.
I think that was, you did a scientific match, no less, right?
Yeah, pretty much so. Almost 30 minutes.
Yeah. And then you had some matches, I mean, just some other matches, like with Bruno, and there was even a hot match with Pedro Morales or whatever. I think because you were my friend, I think every match that you had, you know, was pretty cool. And for me, just to know that I knew you, yeah, it was fun. What was your favorite? Oh, and I will say one of my favorite matches was the one when you put the double bear hug on Jimmy Hart and the Honky Tonk Man. That was another one.
Yeah, that was in the Garden.
What were your favorites at the Garden?
Oh God, there are so many of them. I think the first and second match with Bruno,
right,
in the Garden, because I had never been in the Garden before, and that was kind of, you know, the topping of everything, you know. And I'd always wanted to wrestle in the Garden. Yeah, you know, but, you know, that was only 4 years after I had started wrestling.
Amazing. Of the Northeast Loop, the Spectrum, the Garden, Boston Garden, whatever, which was the place that you could feel the fans? Like, it was hot. It was hotter. You could feel it.
Boston Garden.
And why was that? It was just very close.
It was insane. The people were crazy. And, you know, they're right on top of you. They'd always throw shit in the ring. And, well, you know, they did that everywhere, but it was really intense when you're in the guard. You didn't know if you were going to get hit with a whiskey bottle or a golf ball.
Did you ever get attacked, stabbed, or punched, or anything by any of the fans?
No, not real, not bad. You know, except in Springfield, Massachusetts, I was having an Indian strap match with.
You can't say that. It's a Native American strap match.
Well, no, you probably couldn't say strap because of strap on, so it'd be a Native American rope match. No, that might have. That sounds even worse. I think we just have to cut it all together. No Indian bull matches.
I was wrestling a phony Indian. I was wrestling Chief J. Strongbow. Yeah,
the Italian?
His name is Joe Scarpa. He's Italian. So that I can say Indian strap match.
I guess that's true.
So anyway, I get, you know, towards the end of the match, after about 15, 20 minutes, I roll out of the ring. And I get that strap off of my wrist, and I drag him out, and I'm choking him with it, I'm beating him with it, and everything. And then, of course, the referee disqualifies me. I jump back in the ring and continue beating on Strongbow. So when the match was all over, you know, I jump out, and there's four or five cops on either side of me.
Mm.
To escort me back to the locker room because it was probably 80, 90 feet back to the locker room. And there's a lot of Puerto Ricans that live in that area. Well, those Puerto Ricans, I think there's a couple Irish guys in there too. They came over the top of the cops with chairs.
Well,
and they were throwing chairs. They're, oh, shit. They must have thrown 10, 15 chairs in the ring. And then when I was trying to get back to the locker room, one of those assholes hit me right in the mouth with the chair. Cracked my tooth in half. And once they got me in the locker room, the fucking assholes, they wouldn't leave while the cops turned around and just beat the piss out of them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they had five or six of them laying face down on the concrete with their hands handcuffed behind their backs. And the one cop comes in the locker room, so they can't. We got several of those bastards laying on the floor out here. Come out here and do whatever you want. You kick them in the head, do whatever you want, because they're just a bunch of pricks. So I went out there and I looked at them. They were so fucked up from the cops. The cops beat the shit out of them.
Oh, my God.
Well, they didn't have any choice because they were fighting the cops. And so anyway, I said, you guys have done enough damage. I just turned around, went back in the locker room.
Wow, that shows some super strength. Hey, Ken, you mentioned the Bruno matches at the Garden, and you had to be close to 300 pounds at the time, right? The first one.
I was over 300.
Yeah, you were big and burly. And then when you had your intercontinental run, you were built like a Greek god. So what prompted you to go from over 300 to 265? How did you do it?
I got tired of being fat.
Huh.
Yeah, so I know I quit drinking beer. And, that took 50 pounds off right there. And then I started doing, instead of doing the heavy lifting, I started doing more bodybuilding stuff.
Interesting.
And, watching what I, instead of eating three Big Macs, I'd only eat one. You know, and stuff like that, you know. So, I went from 310 down to, 260, 265.
Yeah, amazing.
I wanted to mention something before I forget. I think I might have been at your last match, Ken.
Uh-huh.
2011 Gathering of the Juggalos, Legends and Icons. You fought Bob Backlund.
Oh, yeah. Down in Illinois, not too far from you.
No, it wasn't. I had a press pass. I got free press passes, so I was there for a couple days.
Yeah, that was the last match.
Yeah, I got to meet Bob Backlund, and I go, I have to shake your hand, and I got the picture shaking his hand. He is such a very nice guy as well.
Yeah, he was just getting his book published at that time. Yeah, I remember that because I wrote, he had me write the foreword in that.
I was reading your book, and I realized the relationship you had built with him. I didn't realize it was so strong. And I realized because you broke him in at the beginning, and I guess you developed that great friendship. He respected that you helped him at the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't break him in. I helped him in the ring.
That's what I mean, in the ring, like you were down in the Jersey Shore or whatever, that first match, yeah.
Yeah, his first match in the WWF was in Wildwood, New Jersey with John Ventura. Yeah, and we went about 25 minutes, and so we get back in the locker room. It wasn't much of a locker. It wasn't much of a building. It was just a little kind of like a park, you know, something that the park borough would run.
Right.
It sat, 600 people maybe?
Yeah, it was a tiny place, yeah.
Yeah, and so we get back to the locker room, and Bobby came over and thanked me, and he says, how was the match, Ken? And I said, you got to slow down, Bob. You're going a million miles an hour out there. I said, other than the black guy, the bloody nose, the fat lip, cauliflower ear that you gave me, I'm doing real good.
So, Ken... Ken, is it true that you never had to tell the Mighty Maccabee to slow down?
No. The Mighty Maccabee had a snail's pace.
I loved your commentary, too. Ken was priceless.
It was good. Ken, I remember there was a random time we met. You probably don't remember this. I was fencing at some national event trying to make the Olympic team down in the Washington, D.C. area. And I was with all my buddies. And we didn't fence until Sunday. And we came down Friday night just in case. And I look in the paper, and Saturday afternoon, there's a matinee at the Landover Cap Center, whatever they called it at the time.
Yeah.
And I said, guys, we're going. So I took all my fencing buddies. Most of them didn't really like wrestling. We went there. And you were wrestling Danucci or whoever it was. So I somehow moseyed my way on down to the walkway when you're coming out of the ring. And you look over and go, hey, Jeff, what are you doing here?
Yeah. No, I remember that. Yeah.
That was pretty random.
I think, Andre and Hogan wrestle on that card?
It could have been. Was it maybe Bruno Zabisco?
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah,
it could have been the end of the Bruno Zabisco run. It might have been that.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't really remember that. I have to look back, but I have to say that was pretty cool. And remember after the Garden, we used to go to that Frankie and Johnny steak place. You, Michael Mansky,
yeah. Remember that? Yeah, big sirloin steaks. I love them.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, fantastic. Mike loved that place.
Yeah, you know, he's a steak. I'm going out to dinner with him tomorrow night to a steak place. He loves those steaks.
He's a steakaholic.
I will say hi for sure. Hey, Ken, was there any one guy that you just hated working with, but just it didn't mesh, or he potatoed you, or just didn't work?
A main eventer?
Yeah,
Putski, Ivan Putski.
Just didn't work. Why? Because he
no, it was all of himself. Yeah, he was a shitty worker. Yeah, he could do. He was very limited, and so. You couldn't call any shots with him because he couldn't do anything.
Huh.
So you just let him do whatever he was going to do, and you work around him. And you know, I still had good matches with him, but God, it was tough.
It was tough.
He thought he was the greatest. Yeah.
He was the shits. Did you guys draw money at least?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I drew money with Ivan, especially in the spot shows. You know, the way the New York territory was set up at that time, you know, we main evented in all the smaller shows and sold most of them out.
And if you're on top of these shows, you get a good paycheck for that?
Well, you know, ticket prices back in those days was, you know, $5-6.
Yeah, it was definitely.
Yeah, but, you know, we pick up sometimes 500, 600. That'd be like 3,000 now.
Yeah, so that's great for a spot show.
Yeah, exactly.
And Ken, you told me you wrestled Andre like 500-600 times, whatever it was, and that he loved you and respected you. You remember the first time you wrestled him? You remember how you guys got over friends and worked it?
I wrestled Andre 600 times.
Yeah.
I don't remember the first time. Oh, yeah, I do. We had a two-ring battle royal in Chicago, and that's when that was a year after I started, and they had Chris Taylor.
Right.
Go up against Mad Dog Vachon.
Yeah.
And of course, Mad Dog Vachon bloodied his nose and closed his eye. But Mad Dog went nuts because it was on Wild World of Sports. Yeah. But yeah, that was a two-man battle royal. That's when I first met Andre.
Wow. And you guys hit it off because you told me that story that I wish I could find a tape of this. In Montreal, that you said put you over. Do you want to tell that great story?
Oh, yeah. I wrestled Andre up in his hometown of Montreal. We were at the Forum. That's a big building, seats 19 to 20,000 people. And I'm in, Andre and I are the main event, of course, and we're wrestling. And, he says slam, so I picked him up, slammed him, and then see what the hell was it? Then I got up. I called a slam. I said slam me. So he gives me a slam. He covers me, and I, you know, kicked out. He took a bump to the middle rope, all the way to the floor. All the way to the floor, and I get up, expecting him to still be in the ring. He was nowhere to be found. So the referee says he took a bump out on the floor. I said, holy shit.
Wow.
So I jump out of the ring, and we're battling on the floor and everything. And yeah, that was a hell of a match. I think it was double disqualification after about 20 minutes.
And you said that put you on the map, and like you were over forever in that.
Oh yeah, I was over like $1 million in Montreal. Yeah, yeah.
Hey Ken, you went to the top so quickly. You said you wrestled Bruno 4 years in. There had to have been professional jealousy from other guys. Did you ever feel it?
Some of the older guys, you know, that'd been in the business for several years, but not really, you know, because they knew I was a legitimate guy. You know, I come out of the Olympic Games. I didn't come to a musclehead gym in Podunk, Iowa, you know. And so they respected me for that. Yeah. So it wasn't too bad, Jeff. Yeah, believe it or not.
And I'm listening to all these podcasts on YouTube because I can't watch Fox News or any politics anymore. So this is how I do my time. And you hear about this guy at heat with this guy and this guy at heat with this guy and all these stories with Rougeau and the Dynamite Kid or Danny Spivey killing Adrian Adonis. It seemed to me that you went through your career, you didn't have that kind of heat with other guys, right?
I never had heat with anybody. No, everybody respected me. And, you know, I wasn't the type of guy, I wasn't a bully. And I didn't fuck people around. I didn't say bad things about other people. Yeah, really, you know, if I had a beef with somebody, I'd tell them the truth. I'd tell it to their face.
Right.
And, you know, none of this behind the back bullshit. And that's where all those confrontations began. It's all the monkey business behind the back.
Yeah.
And so, no, I never got into any fights in the locker room, or I didn't even come close that I'm aware of.
Did you ever call someone out, like you said, to their face? Was there ever a situation where you had to call?
Yeah, yeah. I call them right out, you know, right in their face, you know. I mean, if we were going to go in the locker room, we would have gone right there. But everybody, you know, I was... more of a politician, believe it or not.
No kidding.
Yeah. You know, I say, hey guys, you know, you fucked up or I fucked up, but it's gone now. It's water under the bridge. But if you want to keep after it, you know, this is a perfect place to do it. But by that time, you know, they realized that they were either wrong or this wasn't the place for him to get beat up.
Did you ever have any, were there any promoters that you just had problems working with or didn't pay you properly and you left?
Yeah, Vince McMahon.
At the end?
Yeah, at the end. Yeah. Yeah, he was the only one.
Interesting.
Yeah. Everybody else, all the other promoters I got along good, you know. Sam Mushnick over in St. Louis, Paul Bosch in Houston, Frank Tunney up in Toronto.
What about Bill Watts?
I know Bill. Everybody knew that Bill Watts was skimming off the top, you know.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he'd always, you know, give us a bonus here and there, you know. Because, you know, just from having a guilty conscience, I think. Yeah.
Well, guys, it's been over an hour. I think this is the longest interview I've done in a really long time.
Okay.
But I appreciate it so much. Yeah, I'm getting ready to pack up and go somewhere. But I appreciate, of course, Jeff, I appreciate over a decade now of knowing you and hooking me up with Ken for such a fantastic interview. And thank you guys for tag teaming it for the last half an hour.
You bet. Jeff,
thanks for having us on. Ken, we should touch base soon, and good luck with the, you said the surgery is going to be next week?
Yeah, the 25th.
Okay, so I wish you a lot of luck with that. My fingers are crossed, and hopefully this is the beginning, you know, that your situation will get better, right?
Oh, yeah, I will. Okay, guys.
All right,
take care,
Ken,
everybody.
Yes, best of luck with your surgery, and Jeff, take care of yourself, and have a steak for me.
Okay. Okay, 45 and a half years and counting.
Yes, yes. Say hi to Mike tomorrow.
You bet. Thanks, Ken.
Okay.
Take care, everyone.
Alrighty, bye-bye. See you, Jeff. Thanks, bye-bye.
Okay, my friend. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, sir. It was an absolute honor talking with you, and best of luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you. And your name is Ian?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're Jeff's buddy.
Yeah, Jeff's a good guy.
I know Jeff for a long time. Yeah, okay. I got to run.
Yes, thank you so much. Have a good evening, Ken.
Okay. You too, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alrighty, guys, big thanks to Ken Patera and the Mighty Maccabee, Jeff Buchanz. The longest interview I've done in quite some time. And I feel like when you're listening, it's a lot easier to just understand what everybody's saying. And you can get through it quickly, especially reminiscing about pro wrestling. But we will be back when we see you. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.